Hey friends, welcome. Today's podcast with our special guest may be one of his last interviews. He writes, quote, "At the outset, it's important to recognize that what we today call diversity, equity, and inclusion has always been a social engineering campaign of the gay movement in which radical minorities are merely useful pawns, establishing homosexuality as culturally equivalent to race in the civil rights movement. In the 1990s, they quarterbacked the national anti-discrimination public policy campaign to stigmatize and criminalize social disapproval of homosexuality, using the tactic of building sexual orientation with bundling sexual orientation with race as inseparable legal equivalents. Coming up, the history of DEI in the military. That's next.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Well, friends, you're in for a special treat. This man has been fighting on the front lines in the culture wars for many decades, and we can learn a lot from his columns. We can learn a lot from his books, and that is author and pastor Scott Lively, human rights consultant and missionary with service in more than 50 countries. He's the author of 8 books, including Redeeming the Rainbow, and also he's got a brand new one we're going to tell you about in a minute. The website is scottlively.net. That's scottlively.net. And let's bring him on right now. Brother, so good to see you and spend some time again.
Good to be back with you, David. God bless you, man.
God bless you. So people know what we're going to talk about based on what I read from your article, The History of DEI in the Military. But before we start, I said something a little provocative. There it is, that you can find that at on Scott's website or WorldNet Daily. And there's an also I at WorldNet Daily. It says, my final WND column as of February 17, my final column. So you had a health scare a couple months ago. Share what's going on with you personally and why I said this may be your final interview.
Well, David, a couple of years ago, I decided that I wanted to retire from the culture war. It's been now, as of this year, I got started in 1988.
Wow.
And taking on battles, it's always been by the prompting of the Holy Spirit ever since I got saved. I've always sort of taken on battles that other people were not, you know, aspects of the war that other people were not addressing. For example, in 1995, I published my first book, The Pink Swastika, Homosexuality and the Nazi Party, knowing that it was going to essentially prevent me from ever having a major leadership role in the national pro-family movement because it was just too controversial and too explosive. Mm-hmm. So I've spent all these years doing that. I was named a few years ago as the public enemy number one of the global LGBT movement because I had essentially become a missionary to the global pro-family movement. And was having a lot of success in preventing their agenda in foreign countries, not here. They've just been too powerful here in the U.S. But I have been fighting. I was raised up as a culture war activist during the Reagan Revolution. And when the Reagan Revolution sort of faded away and gave way to the heavy rhino control of the Republican Party, I continue to work as a sort of behind the scenes and behind enemy lines activist for all these years. But I decided after all this time to, I've got a bunch of grandkids now. And frankly, with the re-election of President Trump and the anti-DEI movement rising to such spectacular heights now in terms of power and effectiveness, I don't think I'm really needed anymore. I think the insights that I have are valuable and I'm always going to provide those. But in terms of taking on new battles and being where the fighting is the hottest and all that, I'm done with that. Well, and so I decided on my birthday in December of last year I would resign from the culture war. But just a couple weeks before November 25th, I had a heart attack. It's sort of like with the Lord sort of rubber stamping, endorsing that plan. Anyway.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. We're so blessed to have you on. If this is the last time, again, and now, Jeff, bring up our previous podcast with Scott, Confessions of a Hate Criminal. You guys can go to worldviewmatters.tv. That's worldviewmatters.tv. And in the search at the upper right, just put in Scott Lively to watch that one, or just listen to that one if you're just doing audio, because that shares a lot more of his background and the battle that you've been fighting, brother. I Googled your name earlier just for grins, and one of the first links that came up was the Southern Poverty Law Center. You're on their hate list, right? And so this, by the way, the mantle or the baton is being passed. There's a lot of great people doing some really good work. Let me mention real quick and get your response to Christopher Rufo.
Yeah, he's the first name that came to mind. I've never met the kid, but in fact, I don't even know how old he is, or I've seen his picture, but he really has become a rising star. Robbie Starbuck.
Yep.
I applauded him in a column I did a couple of months ago. It's just the whole MAGA movement has decided to take this on. Finally, conservatives recognize the centrality of the LGBT agenda to the entire leftist juggernaut, right? It's always been the point of the spear going all the way back before anybody was talking about left versus right. Mm-hmm. The LGBTs were planning and strategizing and building incrementally going all the way back to the 1920s. And, and I've been involved, like I said, since the Reagan Revolution. I've seen the culture war from the front lines and multiple dimensions of it all along. It was a single issue focus for me for a very long time until I ran for governor of Massachusetts in 2014, 2018, and broadened to become a sort of full spectrum conservative at that point. But I think I know more about the culture war, the LGBT. When you talk about the culture war, you're really talking about the attempt of the LGBT movement to conquer Christianity and all of these aspects of it, including the Black Civil Rights Movement, which predates it, all became pawns and tools of the gays to achieve their objective. And the way that you can tell, even, you know, there's lots of evidence of that, tons of it. But the best evidence of it is just look at the pride calendar. You know, look at the diversity calendar in America, right? Blacks get February, right? Frozen February. And women get slush month March, right? But the gays get 2 months, the two best months of the year, weather-wise and in terms of access to school children. And that's June and October. October is a history month. So that's all you need to know about who's really driving the agenda, who has the power, who is been empowered and is empowering themselves by the promotion of DEI. And the Blacks and women, I mean, when you're talking women in the leftist agenda, you're really talking to a large extent lesbianism, right? Mm-hmm. Not entirely, but, you know, the ones that actually achieve the highest level of power. You know, governors and attorney generals and all that all across America, sort of representing women's rights are actually representing lesbian rights or lesbian favoritism. And that's just the reality of America today. And it's always been that. And all these other constituencies have just been bundled together in order to help them get through the challenges of public disapproval. So anyway.
Okay, Scott, I want to encourage our viewers and our listeners, who've got people on all kinds of platforms, praise God, to pray for Scott Lively and his family. And I also want you guys to pray for people like Chris Rufo and others who are taking up this baton and this mantle. I follow him on Substack, and he's written some great articles and books, and he put something out in January said, what the left did to me and my family. And Scott, I know you'll relate to this. You've had death threats.
I know, I read that.
You've had all kinds of things. But
I made a comment underneath that under that story. I said, welcome to the club, brother.
Yep. And I pray for endurance for people like him and people that are fighting this fight now. He says that in part, when I lived in Seattle, they put up posters around my neighborhood with my home address telling insane lies about me and instructing activists to show up at my door. Later, they sent letters to a few hundred of my neighbors calling me a Nazi and a white supremacist. I had death threats. References to my family were on there, the whole deal. And he said, a few times I had to pack up the kids and leave town. And he mentions one time one of these activists found one of my children at a park with the babysitter and yelled at him until he started crying. And my son came home terrified. And it goes on. But this is what they do. This is how the left plays, the demonic left. Go ahead.
I've been there. Every single thing he's talking about, I have been through myself. They had... I'm writing my life story, and I'm writing it. I've been developing. If you read my columns on WorldNet Daily, there's 456 columns there.
Oh my goodness!
over the years, I've developed what I call a style of testimonial evangelism. When I write, it isn't just about a guy commenting about what other people are doing. As much as possible, I have provided first-hand witness account of things that have happened. I bring up stuff in my past. I've lived that way, and I believe that's the most powerful testimony that you can have is something from your own experience. You're expressing to people using yourself as an example, like Paul did, right? Mm. Not for self-glorification, but for sort of certifying that you know what you're talking about. Because you actually have been there. You're not just repeating what someone else is doing or recounting the actions of others. You're actually saying, hey, I did this. I saw this. This is what happened. And I pursued it. So now, in retirement, I'm writing my life story. And I'm writing it, doing it with this testimony evangelism style as sort of like, it's like a string of beads, right, in which... It's like a timeline of my life, and that many of the stories along it are full booklets, or even books in some cases, because of the, for example, the lawsuit, the Smug versus Lively lawsuit. It's been 6.5 years in U.S. federal court defending against the claim that I was guilty of crimes against humanity for preaching against homosexuality in Uganda, and wow. Almost, and I ran for governor. This is another of the beads is the experience of actually being a nobody, in fact, a social pariah in Massachusetts, running for governor twice. The first time to break out of the Saul Alinsky box that they had me in to poison the jury pool against me. Right. That was the idea that the only way that I could overcome what they were doing, I would have ended up. I mean, it wasn't a criminal case, so I wouldn't have been in jail, but I would have been completely wiped out. And so I ran for governor in 2014 in order to do something bigger than the LGBTs could control in terms of media coverage. And it worked, and it broke out of that box. But so these are all different sort of beads on the string of firsthand experience talking about the history of the culture war. So from the Reagan Revolution to the Trump insurgency, right, or counter-revolution is really what it is.
Yeah,
I've been there in every single step of the way, often in the most important of the battles. So I personally picketed outside the Supreme Court when they were doing the Obergefell case. My law firm, when I ran my law firm in Southern California, my law partner and I were the only law firm in the nation to ask the Supreme Court not to take the Lawrence versus Texas case, which is the one that overturned the sodomy laws and provided the springboard to gay marriage, which happened, the first one in Massachusetts, under Romney.
Yeah. Right?
All these things, I was there. I saw them all. And so I'm writing, I guess... In that sense, I'm still in the culture war in the sense of, but in terms of being of telling the history, and out of that comes insights and explanations and background that assist those that are on the front lines now And I hope very much that those who are fighting the battle will not forget that some of us, like myself, Peter LaBarbera, Linda Harvey in Ohio, Brian Kamenker in Massachusetts as Mass Resistance. There were a handful of us who were single issue pro-family activists going all the way back that fought this battle. Tulsi Gabbard's dad, Mike Gabbard, was one of us. And we all met there back in 1992, I think. 92 in the basement of a hotel in Framingham, Massachusetts. Mike Gabbard actually flew to meet me on the West Coast, and we flew together to go to that meeting. And we wrote what would become sort of the definition of the natural family. You know, all these plans, but eventually it just came down to just defining what the natural family actually is, because that's the thing that we really need to preserve and conserve and to bring back to primacy in the culture.
Yes.
So anyway, these vignettes, these experiences, I think are valuable to those like Rupo and others who are taking this on. Don't forget that there are pioneers who went before you on these trails and took the airwaves before anyone was paying attention. Right.
Yep.
They did to me everything they did to Donald Trump, every single thing they did to Donald Trump, they did to me first when I was in Oregon. Doxing, lawfare. I had four lawsuits for over $11 million against me before the Crimes Against Humanity lawsuit years later. The bigot poster squads that would kick over the tables when you were collecting petition signatures to try to put things on the ballot, dirty tricks, being sued, the first lawsuit, being sued for battery by a lesbian activist who infiltrated our private meeting. And when I put her out physically, gently but firmly, she sued me for battery. Oh, and they scheduled the trial for that for 3 weeks or 6 weeks before the election of ballot measure 9, which was the No Special Rights Act, which we lost in Oregon, but we won in Colorado. And it became Amendment 2 that was the basis for the Supreme Court case, Romer versus Evans, right? Which was the first of the four lawsuits, of the four Supreme Court decisions, the majority opinion of which was written by Anthony Kennedy, that established gay cultural supremacy in America. It was taking down Amendment 2 was what did that. But anyway, I was part of all that. But I ended up in front of a Nike corporate lawyer who was put in place as the pro tem judge of this defamation case. And they timed it so that that happened just before the election. And then for the election cycle, they had a television commercial. I mean, of course, I lost it. Our lawyer was just, it was his first case out of law school. Well, what a disaster! And but the TV commercial had these three vignettes, and the center one was this ominous. You know, it's like they said, a lesbian is beaten by an official of the OCA. They spent $1 million on this all over the state, and then they put posters. You talk about Rufo's. They put posters with my face on it throughout the entire neighborhood where I live with my family, and hang your head in shame, Scott Lively, and then listed all this nonsense. So, I've just these are the things that you face, or you used to. Now that Trump is in office, and I'm blown away that he is not sort of giving any ground to the LGBTs at this point. We'll see what happens during Pride Month.
Right.
Because it looks like this is the big problem. If people listening to the show don't get anything else from what I say, just remember this battle is not about DEI. This is this battle is about the LGBT agenda and whether or not we push them back into the closet or they stay out and remain in power and gay marriage gets incorporated into mainstream culture from now on. That's going to be the test, because if they win that battle and we don't roll back gay marriage and we don't get back to the place where we have tolerance but not acceptance for the LGBT agenda, then it's all going to be a waste, because they're just going to grow back up like a, you know, like a weed. They're going to grow back up, and everything that we thought we've won will be lost again, as has happened over and over.
Yeah. Hey, we've got to take a brief pause. Shout out to one of our sponsors. We'll be right back with Scott Lively.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. Hey, friends, thanks to you and, of course, God, our episodes have been surging across all the various platforms, Apple, Spotify, Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, our Freedom Project Media app. So praise God for the growth of Worldview Matters. Back to Scott Lively. By the way, follow us on YouTube. We have a new YouTube channel, Worldview Matters, David Fiorazzo. Scott, your take real quick on the the Democrat governor of Wisconsin, who recently wants mothers to be called inseminated persons. This was just in the news last week. Inseminated persons. He actually changed the wording of some of the language in one of these bills. Just, you know, we know that they're going to double down. We know that some are not going to just say, maybe we should come back toward the middle a little bit and be moderate. Nope. They're ideologically driven. There's this spirit of delusion. Yeah. And go ahead.
They're just crazy. I mean, the thing about it is that the public has never really been behind this, but everyone was afraid to say that they weren't for it. Right? That's the power. That was the power that the left wielded, right? Mm-hmm. When you control the media, you have, you know, the intelligence agencies are driving your narrative and all that. You can basically act with impunity, but you can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And once the population realized that Donald Trump was going to win and they didn't have to hide their true views anymore, all of a sudden people started coming out of the woodwork and pretending like they'd been doing it all along, which is the funny part. But, you know, all these people that were just, you know, shaking in their boots, that are all of our allies and our friends, they're now out in the street and they realize they're looking around. We have the power now. We're not going to put up with this garbage anymore.
Yeah.
And so and when it comes to figures like and the governor of Maine, too, you know, doubling and tripling down on, you know, these people are bought and paid for, right? Mm. They're agents of powers behind them, and they really don't have a real choice.
Yeah.
If, you know, they've got to toe the line. They owe a tremendous amount to the people that cheated them into office in many cases. And but it's good that it's happening because normal people, you know, the normies are back in charge, and they're not going to put up with this anymore. And the crazier these lefty loons get, the more vocal they are, the more powerful the anti-DEI movement is going to get. And so
Scott, I want to go back to your article real quick and the history of DEI in the military. And in the article you wrote, and we're going to talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell briefly, that was signed into law in 1993 and how that affected things in the 90s. But in the article you wrote about an essay that you did titled Don't Repeal, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and you sent it to senators. It says there would certainly be a mass exodus of normal men from a homosexualized military. The entire premise of a military system based on voluntary service is that young men will want to serve. But will normal men want to volunteer when they know they will share close quarters with other men for whom they will be objects of sexual interest? It is a recipe for deep and widespread moral and morale problems. Go ahead. We've just got 3 minutes left, Scott, and expound on that.
Yeah, that's, you know, I was friends with Ron Ray, who was the JAG attorney that fought the battle over gays in the military, right? Remember, Bill Clinton ran on that theme. I confronted Clinton on a parallel topic about the Boy Scouts and a live simulcast in Portland and Seattle, and forced him into a corner where he had to say he did not support the homosexuals getting making advances in the Boy Scouts. There's a great Rush Limbaugh covered that the next day. But getting in the military was his baby. He was being funded by the big money gays in order to do that. And then as soon as he got into office, he tried it. It crashed and burned, but he pushed for it anyway. He put it through an executive order granting homosexuals top secret security clearance. That's when they took over the intelligence agencies. It was all Clinton that did that. And then so the battle was fought about gays in the military, and the military won. The conservatives in the military won. But then the bureaucrats decided to capitulate anyway, and they brought in Don't Ask, Don't Tell as a compromise position, which was really just a stepping stone, waiting until the populace had been further propagandized enough that they would be willing to accept open homosexuality, which then happened under Obama. I fought this all the way around. I actually went to D.C. with the article that I wrote and passed out copies. I confronted my senator, Scott Brown, or his office anyway, who were bragging that he had stood strong against letting it come out of the committee. And then within a month, he's holding a press conference, flipping his vote in support of repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and accompanied by the most powerful LGBT organization from Massachusetts standing behind him while he signed.
Jeez.
Right. You know, this I've seen all along. And just as I predicted, the recruitment had crashed totally until Trump got in and put Pete Hegseth in that place. And everything's turned around in the space of days, really.
Yep.
Weeks.
So very briefly, friends, go to WND.com, type in Scott Lively, and that's where you can look up the history of DEI in the military. There was so much else I wanted to talk to you about. I know your thoughts on Pete Hegseth. I was going to get those, but we've got less than a minute. I just want to mention your brand new book, Scott. Tell us about that in the scottlively.store called Nazi Germany's Dirtiest Secrets. In 30 seconds, please.
Well, this was going to have been the sixth edition of the Pink Swastika, but I did it as a solo book. It's 620 pages of documentation on the homosexual roots of the Nazi Party. There would never have been a Nazi Party if it hadn't been for the German gay subculture. And then they jumped the ocean, came to the United States, and then they did the same thing over here. And that's what this book, more about Americans understanding the roots of what happened here than it is about Germany.
Okay, scottlively.net. Brother, I appreciate your voice and your work and your tireless efforts through all these years. God bless you, sir, and thank you for all you do. Friends, God bless you, and thank you so much for sharing the podcast. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.